Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So we have some, this is actually one of these listener mails where we're recording this 2 weeks out, I think, from when it's actually going to air. So if you've sent out something more recently, well, it's just accumulating in the mailbag and we'll have to get to it.
It's just in the bottom of the bag, growing fungus in the dark. But I think it should still be readable by the time we're back, which if you're listening to this now, we are.
I'm hoping it's going to be filled with lots of accounts of people's pet hermit crabs, people writing in about their Hermes, telling us what they eat, sending photos. That's what I'm looking forward to.
All right, let's see. This first message comes from Benjamin, and it is in regards to chainsaws and some previous listener mail. Benjamin says, "Hello, Stuff to Blow Your Mind people. This message is in reply to Chris's email from the listener mail episode released on the 15th of November. After hearing about sideline enthusiasts cheering on their favorite downhill mountain bike riders with a barless, chainless chainsaw, I can understand your skepticism. I would be willing to bet a brand new steel wood boss that this form of cheering has migrated over from motocross. Granted, this is speculation. However, I remember seeing fans cheering on motocross riders using chainsaws sans bar with a set of handlebars and number plate attached across the top when I attended a race outside Pittsburgh in the late 1990s. This display makes slightly more sense as motocross bikes at the time were mostly powered by two-stroke engines, just like most chainsaws." Oh, and Rob, by the way, when I went back after we read that email from Chris and I looked it up just to make sure Chris was not lying to us, I did find evidence of people using chainsaws on the sidelines at the mountain biking event. So that is apparently at least sometimes true. Benjamin goes on. "While I'm on the topic, I was waiting with bated breath through both chainsaw episodes for Rob to at least mention all the chain weapons in Warhammer 40,000. While this class of weapon is just as improbable as most of the weapons technologies in said universe, your spotlight on the topic found me looking at the 40K chain weapon art and I noticed something I never had before. All the chain weapons I've seen in 40K have the tooth pattern associated with old saws, not the modern teeth patterned after the grub mandibles. This hadn't come to my attention prior. Thank you for all that you do, Benjamin. Wow, that is some observation, Benjamin. So they've got the teeth would be more like the scratching knife tip type teeth rather than the chiseling or chipper type teeth that were designed by Joseph Cox after observing the Pine Sawyer beetle.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about this either. I mean, Warhammer 40K chainsaws are probably the chainsaws I look at more than real life chainsaws. And I mean, I guess part of it is like these are based on miniatures that are you're going to paint, and maybe that works better to have those little teeth. And also, yeah, they look like teeth. They look like jagged metal animal teeth in this weird sword. So maybe it just works better for a fantasy weapon.
Rob, I don't know. I guess I hadn't mentioned this off mic. Since we did our chainsaw episodes, I've actually had a chance to use a chainsaw.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you use it on?
My father-in-law brought one over, and we used it on some. I was cutting down some brush in my yard.
Yeah. Did you do proper safety and all that?
I think so. I don't know. Thinking back on it now, I didn't wear goggles or eye protection, and I did get some like chips flying up in my eyes. So don't do what Donnie Don't does if you're using a chainsaw in addition to all the other. You should probably cover up your eyes. I can speak from experience. That doesn't feel good.
Yeah, they never do this in the various horror movies that we see. And you know, the Space Marines even, they have the helmets. They're supposed to be wearing the helmets, but there are plenty of images and figures where they've taken the helmet off and they have a roaring chainsaw, or chainsword rather. And like, what are you doing, guys? You're going to get all sorts of weird gunk in your eyeballs.
So anyway, in the ensuing days, I've ordered about 3 dozen chainsaws off the internet. They should be arriving over the next few weeks.
There are some really interesting chains. I remember seeing one at a store once where I'm not even sure what function this was for, but it like had a pair of jaws at the end and the little tiny chainsaw inside of it, kind of like xenomorph jaws. I mean, I guess it was for some sort of specialized like gripping of a tree branch and using the saw blade, but it was weird.
Oh, was it a what's called a like a lopper chainsaw? It kind of like combines like clippers and chainsaw blades.
Ooh, I don't think it was. I just had to look up this lopper chainsaw you're talking about, and this is a strange device. It looks kind of like scissors, but it's also a chainsaw. Crazy. There's so many chainsaw innovations these days. But I guess it did kind of look like this. But imagine if it also had like a little chainsaw inside its mouth.
All I can think of now is like a sort of cyborg form of dentures where your teeth are replaced with tiny chainsaws for enhanced chewing.
I have it now, Joe. I'm totally ruining my my shopping algorithm here by looking these things up. But I think what I saw, it was a jaw saw. So it looks like some sort of a Lowe's or Home Depot xenomorph with a little chainsaw in its mouth.
Oh, I see exactly what you mean. Yeah, so it's got it's almost like a guide or a guard in a Y shape, and then coming out like a tongue sticking out in between the jaws is the end of the chainsaw.
I guess this is like a safety measure. Like it's a way of making use of the saw, but having it within that protected like metal cuff of a mouth.
That would make sense. I bet this kind of design is less likely to kick back and like accidentally nick you in the leg or something.
I'd be interested to hear from anyone out there who's used one of these. What's it like? Let's keep the chainsaw chat going. All right. Speaking of chainsaw chat, here's one from Anna. Anna says, I have enjoyed the episodes about chainsaws, and I have also enjoyed listeners' responses to them. One thing I was thinking about when I was listening to the episode is the image of the lumberjack. They are generally seen as salt-of-the-earth type of people. I grew up in Tasmania, where logging was a big thing, so much so that wood chopping was a sport that people would go and watch. I don't know if this is popular elsewhere, but competitors would compete to see who could chop through a log the fastest. I know you were talking about chainsaw horror movies. I was wondering if this is just an upgrade of the axe murderer stories. I had the idea that the chainsaw is seen as a replacement for the hardworking man with an axe. Now, with this new technology, people are losing the value of hard work, and maybe that is part of what makes chainsaw murders so bad. I am not sure if I am overthinking this, but it was just a thought I had.
Well, like we talked about in the episodes, at least in the case of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think Toby Hooper seems to have had some ideas about economics and work and consumerism in mind when he was making the first movie. And it certainly comes through in some of the satire in the second movie, because the second movie has my favorite scene in the whole thing is just a scene where Dennis Hopper goes shopping for chainsaws.
Oh yeah. And he gets the two smaller saws to go in holsters, and then he gets the Big Daddy saw as well.
But yeah, he's just at the place shopping, and the shopkeeper there is watching him, like, pretending to duel, like, seeing like how it feels in his hand swinging it at things.
Oh yeah, we do get a little chainsaw dueling in that film. I'm not sure if that's the first place we see it cinematically. It might be, but I know that chainsaw dueling also shows up in, I think, the second Phantasm movie, and of course more recently there's a little bit of it in Mandy, which I think was very much included as an homage to these pictures. I would say that in reality, based on what I have learned about chainsaws, it would be a very poor idea to try and do a chainsaw duel. That sounds like a terrible choice.
Terrible.
In fact, I'm kind of curious to go back and watch these sequences just to try and figure out how they did it with any, you know, even a modicum of safety, you know, while making it look like the saws are in fact running.
Yeah. All right, Rob, you ready for some messages about Dune?
Oh, always.
Okay. Well, just real quickly, I wanted to read from Sean, who is following up from something I said in our Dune episodes. Sean says, "Hi, Joe and Robert. I'm listening to the Bene Gesserit episode while running and had to stop quickly just to say I remember the same paperback copy of Dune Joe had." With, I would say, 6-point font, the letters almost to the edge of the page, several lines on each page, often at angles. Yeah, this I feel vindicated. This sounds about right to my memory. Anyway, Sean says, "Love the show. Back to the episode and my run."
Yeah, I might have had a copy like that at some point, like when I was younger. I think text that size would just be absolutely painful for me at this point. I'm currently rereading Dune on a Kindle, so that means I can change the font size to whatever suits me.
Seems perfect. All right, I'm going to read also this message from Renata discussing Dune, as well as a recent Vault episode about mushroom foraging.
All right.
Renata says, "Hi, Joe and Rob. I loved your recent Vault episode on mushroom foraging. You seem impressed that deer will eat just enough of a toxic food to get a nutritional benefit while avoiding the toxic effects. But I was surprised you didn't mention that humans are masters at this game. The most clear example of this to me is alcohol. I can't remember where I heard this theory." She thinks possibly from us, though I don't remember us talking about this. But she says, "It is that humans developed a liking for alcohol because in our primate ancestors, it signaled that a fruit is ripe, therefore containing more sugars. If they eat just enough of a fruit as it begins to ferment, they get maximum sugars. If they wait too long, they get intoxicated or maybe worse. There are plenty of other examples. Pineapples contain bromelain, which is used as a meat tenderizer and can cause your tongue to go numb if you eat enough. I recently developed a sensitivity to quinoa because it contains small amounts of saponin, which is a toxin but usually thoroughly washed off when you prepare quinoa. But apparently, if you're exposed to too much of it once, a fateful salad from a cafe in my case, even consuming minuscule amounts of it after that will cause a reaction. For me, that's hours of intense stomach cramps. Many foods naturally contain inulin, which is not digestible, but which is a prebiotic that can promote gut health. My favorite source is sunchokes, but beware consuming too much. Check out this Amazon review of gummy bears containing inulin for some colorful descriptions of what can happen." And then she links to user reviews of a product that apparently made people have a lot of defecation emergencies.
Ah, I do have to say, sunchokes are absolutely glorious. I have not had them recently, but I love my sunchokes or Jerusalem artichokes, if you will.
Also, I want to follow. I was reading about saponin on quinoa. It is true that grains of quinoa are naturally, they tend to be coated in this this organic substance called saponin, which kind of creates a foamy, soapy-like texture sometimes when combined with water. But I don't think that's like a reason to be concerned about eating quinoa. Like it seems like there's not really usually enough of it to hurt someone, and you can wash it off prior to eating it. Apparently, some types of quinoa that are sold will instruct people to rinse it before you cook it.
Mm.
Oh, but the thing about bromelain too is interesting because I've seen bromelain used, like Renata says, as a meat tenderizer. Like people sort of mashing up a big pineapple and then soaking some cut of meat in it in order to make it more tender to the tooth.
Mm. Yeah. I think I had an incident once where I had some sort of this was. I don't know. This was probably, I think it was a fish dish, or maybe it was back when I still ate chicken, but there was some sort of meat and it had a pineapple salsa on it. And I let it sit in the fridge overnight. And by the next morning, the pineapple had like just reduced the meat to mush. It was quite interesting.
Oh yeah. You don't want to let your pineapple marinade go too long, or your dinner will turn into a melt movie.
Yeah. A fine paste.
Oh, but Renata goes on talking about Dune. So she says, I also wanted to comment that I went into Dune nearly cold. I watched the Lynch adaptation about 6 years ago, but was only half paying attention. When I heard about the latest adaptation, I purposely avoided Dune content so I could go in as cold as possible. I found it exceedingly easy to follow, and I thoroughly enjoyed the film. Like you, I felt that it found inventive ways to make the necessary exposition diverse, fun, and clear. The narration and on-screen text at the beginning gave way to dialogue that helped explain what was happening, but most impressive to me was the way Villeneuve teaches you a visual and auditory language that lets you intuitively follow the story without endless expositional dialogue. My favorite example was that of the force fields, which are blue when they are effectively maintaining protection and red when they're penetrated. This adaptation of Dune rivals my favorite film, 2001: A Space Odyssey, for being as close to cinematically and technically flawless as you can get. Well, glad to hear another good review. I loved it as well. I agree with everything you say. I also really enjoyed the color coding of how the shields, the energy shields, were working, because you could see even from a distance when somebody had managed to move the knife through the shield slow enough that it wasn't deflected, because everything would turn red suddenly.
Yeah.
Finally, she says, deeply appreciate your show. I can't stop sharing anecdotes I learn with my friends, and listening has become a big part of my daily routine. Thanks for making new episodes and picking great Vault episodes to share. Best, Renata. Well, thank you for writing in.
Yeah. These are some excellent thoughts. I'm enjoying continuing to hear from folks about the latest Dune adaptation. Since everyone enjoys fan casting so much, we should really get in on this window we have right now before they officially cast the Emperor and Fade Rotha. Who do you think would be ideal to play these roles? I'm excited to see who they pick.
Fade Rotha, Sting again.
That would Sting be interesting. Now. Sting, yeah, I mean Sting could totally do it. That would be interesting.
He has not actually aged a single day since the last movie.
For Fade Rotha, I don't know. It's tempting to want to go with one of the Skarsgård children, since we have Papa Skarsgård doing such a great job as the Baron. Maybe get Bill Skarsgård in there.
I'm not endorsing this choice, but some people on the internet are apparently suggesting the guy who plays Joffrey in Game of Thrones.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen what he looks like these days. He was still basically a child actor at the time. So maybe he's perfect for it now. I don't know.
I don't know. I would, if I were him, I would, if they reached out, I would be hesitant, because even as great of a role as this would be, you don't want to be typecast for the rest of your career as a little fancy tyrant.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at a present, current picture of him, and I don't know. Maybe he could do it. Maybe he is perfect for it. I don't know. I'm still going with my gut and saying Bill Skarsgård, but again, I'm excited to see what actually happens, and hey, I'm excited to see what sort of suggestions our listeners make.
Vin Diesel.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, here's another bit of listener mail. This one comes from Jim in New Jersey, and it's in response to the episode on luck. Robert and Joe, when it comes to luck, here are my two favorite quotes. The harder I work, the luckier I get. This is attributed to too many to find its original author. And then luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And this is from Roman philosopher Seneca. I don't believe in luck, but I consider myself a lucky person. I'm not sure how to resolve those inconsistencies. I never believed in lucky items, but I had a few habits while taking tests in college. Some may consider them superstitious based upon luck, but I thought of them as rituals and traditions. They included wearing dark blue on the day of the test. This was easy since it was a school color. Taking 4 number 2 pencils wrapped in a rubber band and a handheld eraser, and never taking any books or notes unless it was an open book test or one that allowed notes during the exam. These rituals got me into a test-taking mental state on the test day. Taking books or notes not allowed during the test would only encourage me to cram in the hallway immediately before the test. I felt that was a crutch, and I wanted to enter the testing room with confidence. I wasn't sure if I felt pity or disdain for those cramming in the halls. I did pretty well in tests, so I guess it worked for me. Jim in New Jersey.
Wow, Jim coming in with, like, nerd swagger.
Yeah, I mean, this is just you get into the topic of luck, though, it gets so, it's all over the place. It's the different ways we think about it. And, I don't even, certainly I don't think we got into this in the conversation, but then there's this whole, area, too, of, like, luck as how it can be utilized as kind of like a toxic positivity. Like overly reminding somebody of how lucky they are. Oh, you're lucky for this. You're lucky to have this or that or the other. There are just so many dimensions to the human concept of luck that you could just discuss it almost endlessly.
All right. Well, maybe we should round things out with one last message on Weird House Cinema. And this one is a real treat because this is a bit of listener mail from our own producer, Seth. It came into the mailbox and I was like, what, Seth? Is this from you? And he confirmed it was. So I feel truly honored that Seth was inspired to chime in.
And to take you to task.
That's right. Because so recently people were asking about the Friday the 13th franchise. And I think a listener wrote in to say, hey, I'm not sure you were right that Jason Voorhees becomes a revenant in the 6th movie. I think he's a revenant since the beginning because they say that he drowned many years ago. That's sort of the backstory. And my feeling on that as well, I think it's just a sloppy retcon. You know, they say that at the beginning and then they wanted to make a second movie and they're like, well, you know, he's alive now. Okay. But Seth has an alternative vision. So he says, in response to last week's listener mail episode where the concept of Jason Voorhees' supernatural nature was discussed, I feel the need to deliver what I believe is the definitive answer to this question. Jason Voorhees is a deadite. If anyone is unaware, a deadite is a parasitic demon that feasts on the souls of living creatures found primarily in the Evil Dead franchise. And then he's even got a whole timeline laid out. So he says the truncated timeline would go like this. Pamela Voorhees was the cook at Camp Crystal Lake. Her son, Jason, drowned while swimming in the lake because of a lack of supervision from the counselors. Distraught, Pamela turns to dark magic to revive her dead son. She uses the Necronomicon Ex Mortis to cast a resurrection spell of some sort, but a human sacrifice is required. This is why she begins her killing spree. By the end of the first film, she has very nearly obtained the number of deaths required, but while attempting to obtain her last soul, this would be Alice, the main character of the first Friday the 13th movie, Pamela herself is beheaded, thus becoming the final sacrificed soul. Very soon after, we see a fully revived but quite ghoulish Jason erupt from the lake in the film's final jump scare. There are fan theories aplenty on this topic, but there is official corroboration as well. The director of Friday the 13th Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell, which, to add my aside on this, is an absolutely miserable atrocity of a movie. Like a lot of the other ones are bad, but very fun. I feel like Jason Goes to Hell, I just dare you to try to finish watching it.
Because I think you've mentioned before, he does not actually go to hell in this, right? This is not Dante's Inferno sort of plot line.
Not only does he not go to hell, most of the time he doesn't even appear on screen. He just Jason possesses people. So it's just actors walking around with his soul in them.
Oh, man, that's just false advertising.
Yeah. But anyway, to continue with Seth's thoughts here, Seth says, the director of this movie, Jason Goes to Hell, Adam Marcus, went out of his way to make sure that Jason's deadite status is an official part of the Friday the 13th canon by having the Necronomicon Ex Mortis and the Kandarian Dagger. This is a magic dagger that appears in the ninth movie that is, for some reason, the only thing that can kill Jason. To have these items be discovered in the Voorhees home. Seth finishes up by saying there are other bits of proof to be found throughout the series, and it definitely adds an interesting layer of complexity to the whole franchise. Keep up the great work, Seth. Well, Seth, I couldn't be more appreciative of you sharing your thoughts on this subject, but I'm going to say I think this is also obviously a late retcon. Surely Steve Miner, when he made the second Friday the 13th movie, did not have any of this in his head, but that's okay. That's okay. I accept the, you know, the sort of franchise crossing retcons that works for me.
Well, and then I think the other part of this is that we at least were going to get at some point. They were talking about doing Ash from Evil Dead versus Freddy versus Jason type of a film, and I think we ended up getting a comic book instead because, you know, the forces didn't properly align there. So The franchises were going to further converge, like star systems crashing into each other.
I may have mentioned this thought on the show before, but coming back to the episode that Seth and I did in October about a horror movie music, I would hold up Jason Goes to Hell as probably the worst example of film scoring I have ever heard. The music in that movie is so bad, the music is actually funny.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but you've mentioned this before, and I remember looking it up, thinking, well, it couldn't be that bad, surely, but it is that bad. I remember it being wretched. Especially since, I mean, the Friday the 13th movies, of the things they're known for, one of the great things is that that little ch-ch-ch-ch-ch sound effect, that part of the, I guess you would consider that part of the score, part of the audio realm that Jason lives in. Like, that's so effective.
Oh, yeah. The classic Harry Manfredini theme. And I think they still use that in Jason Goes to Hell, but I don't know. Allegedly, the music in Jason Goes to Hell is by the same composer as the original one, Harry Manfredini, but I don't know, something is wrong with it. The dynamics of it are just so weird. It's just full of constant stings that are not associated with anything happening on the screen. So you just get like minutes at a time of just dun, da-da-dun, da-da-dun. It just stings and stings and stings, and it doesn't add up to anything. It's bizarre.
Now, this is not to be confused with the disco hit that sprang out of the Friday the 13th franchise, right? I think we've talked about that on the show before, right?
Disco hit? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there was some bit of there was some musical bit from one of the Friday the 13th films that became this big like disco hit during at that time.
Oh, okay, once again, Seth has the answers on this. He just cut in to let us know this is the theme song from Friday Part 3, another one of the worst entries in the franchise, I think.
Oh, yeah. But the music is solid. This is great.
Okay. Well, maybe I got to go listen to that right now.
Well, I have it queued up as well, so I'm gonna listen to it right after we wrap here. So, speaking of which, let's go ahead and close out this mailbag. But hey, it's going to be 2 weeks for us before we record another listener mail. So that's ample time for folks to get in there with their thoughts on recent episodes, some of our crab episodes, perhaps some of the vault episodes that are coming out, the more recent Weird House Cinemas. All of it is fair game. Write in. Let us know what you're thinking. In the meantime, if you want to check out other listener mail episodes, they air every Monday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Artifact on Wednesday, Weird House Cinema on Friday. That's just our time to focus in on a strange movie and put most serious matters aside.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.